This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions related to medicine, health, and nutrition. And today, joining me, as usual, Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mutin. She is the possessor of registered dietitian credential, as well as a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How you doing, Layla?
I'm all right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. Very well, thanks. And remind our listeners that the way to get us questions is via this email address, radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. That's easy to remember, and we get a lot of questions, and we try to answer as many of them as we can if they're relevant, on the mark, and not too global in their ambitions to get a medical problem solved. So, big week. Last week, I interviewed Nina Teicholz, who's the author of The Big Fat Surprise, who along with, she's an investigative journalist like Gary Taubes, and she has been very, very involved in blowing the lid off the low-fat myth and has been, she's really, as a layperson, she has a master's degree, but she's not a medical researcher, she's not an MD. But she does a very good job picking apart the research and critiquing the way that conclusions have been drawn about the potentially harmful effects of meat.
Yeah. She has excellent references in her book. The book
Absolutely.
Is wonderful. Yeah.
So this created a big firestorm because, as you know, the World Health Organization issued a new manifesto which suggests that not only is processed meat a problem, I think pretty much there's some consensus about the potential hazards of processed meat, although Nina in my podcast even challenged some of the data on that. The point that she made was interesting. She said, human beings have been consuming smoked meat from almost time immemorial. And while that is not, specifically chemicalized, burning hydrocarbons leave residues on hams and on preserved meats. Mm-hmm. And this has not led to a major epidemic of cancer in primitive societies, that do this.
Right.
And yet, in our modern industrialized societies, we tend to say, well, bacon, that kills you, sausage, that kills you. And I was kind of tickled because I just saw a picture of a woman celebrating her 102nd birthday, and she says that the secret to her longevity is she eats bacon every day.
So there you go.
There's always an outlier. But, I'm not going to debate the merits of that study with you, but I just want to say that there's an ongoing debate about that. And it's also the point that she made, too, is that the World Health Organization is an organization that also has sort of an environmental agenda. They want to keep our carbon footprint low. They want to save the planet, which is laudable.
Mm.
And the belief is that animal husbandry is less environmentally friendly than growing arugula in a field, although that, too, can be disputed.
All that methane.
Yeah, right? is that animals eat higher in the food chain, and they require, more crops to sustain them. On the other hand, there are actually some people who argue that if you're going to get those fresh blueberries that are flown in by jet from Guatemala in February, that's not exactly environmentally friendly either. The jet fuel and the truck fuel to get
Excellent
it to the store.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
And the refrigeration, it's not an exactly an energy efficient product.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but the point is that we make these broad sweeping generalizations about diet, and then we purvey them to the American public, and the net result has not been good, because the dietary recommendations, you know, for as long as I can remember, we've been making dietary recommendations, and the net result is Americans are getting fatter, our rates of heart disease and diabetes, if anything, are going up.
Yeah.
Heart disease a little less, I have to admit. Heart disease a little less, but diabetes going up.
Yeah.
And
you know what else? Even though there are more people exercising, obesity, it's not really not making a dent in obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting, but, you know, we're on the inside. We know that most of weight loss has more to do with diet.
Right.
Than, yeah. I mean, you could go on that treadmill at the gym, but if you're going to follow that with pizza and french fries, it's not going to help that beer belly. It's not going to help any of that. So,
yeah, I think there's something called moral licensing, which occurs with certain exercisers. They feel like, hey, you know, I paid at the gym already. I paid it forward. So, and then mm-hmm. the devices don't help, because the devices tell us that, oh, we burned off 300 calories. Well, great. Then does that mean we could immediately go out and
that
consume?
Means I could go eat a Snickers bar, because that's 280 calories.
Right.
Yay. And I have 20 calories to spare.
Right. So although I got to admit,
that means wait. Let me take that further.
Yeah.
Then I could put a 16 calorie teaspoon of sugar into my tea. Do you think?
Yeah. That doesn't really work. And you know,
right.
So I have to admit, though, I'm a little bit susceptible to moral licensing, because one of the main reasons I exercise a ton is because I like to eat, and I'd rather exercise.
Yeah, but Dr. Hoffman, hold on. We have to differentiate here. You eat good food.
Indeed.
You eat good food. You eat quality dark chocolate. We're not talking about the Snickers bar. We're not talking about, you know, so much dairy chocolate and all that other kind of stuff. So, you know, we're not talking about a donut.
Right. You've been looking at my lunch pail in the lunchroom, so you kind of know what I tend to eat, and it's pretty clean. Although
sneak a peek, right?
I got to, you know, I can't hold a candle to you. You are extremely disciplined, because you actually bring your food from home. That is laudable. You know, that's really great.
No, you know what it's become. First of all, it's good and frugal for me.
Yeah.
It's a good, nice, frugal thing for me to do, because I'd rather spend that money elsewhere on things
right.
that are more important than buying lunch. I like what I bring for my lunch.
Right.
And on the odd occasion that I don't bring my lunch, or I wasn't prepared, I didn't get my grocery shopping done, and I do go out to the local salad bar, what a difference in flavor.
Yeah, you're disappointed.
There is so much more. Yeah, it is disappointing. Whatever dressings are being used, I'm like, that's not my good quality olive oil and really wonderful balsamic or red wine vinegar or whatever I may be using that day.
You have no control of what goes into that. So that, I think, is a factor in preparing your own food. And, you know, I got to say, I'm, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous. You know, I'm a real homebody. I prepare, 98% of my meals. The few times that I go out, you know, sometimes I go out with the family. I'm not a real foodie.
Yeah.
Sometimes I go out for a business meeting like I did last night, and we went to a nice restaurant. And by the way, a nice restaurant in New York, Artisanal, very nice, sort of a French bistro type restaurant, although it's a lot about cheese and it's a lot about bread, neither of which I had, but you can work your way around
that menu. That's French.
I mean, it was like they had actually, you know, like some places have like a wine room, you know, like a wine cave. They have like a cheese cave. You can walk in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like this little side room where you can look at the, you know, these giant wheels of cheese and, you know, whatever.
So you could have a little sliver of brie on a sliced pear and put a walnut on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you're devastatingly allergic to dairy, and we do have some patients who pretty much have to stay away. So for me, you know, I think with me it's an issue of I'm knocking wood here. My allergies have been really under control this fall, and I think the reason is I've been pretty good about avoiding wheat and dairy. And what I find is I can have a tidbit, you know, a little bit here and there, a taste here and there, but if I have it consistently, then, you know, my nose turns into a faucet. So that's a good incentive for me to want to stay away.
Yeah. I think dairy... Correct me if I'm wrong. I think dairy is just a phlegm maker, a mucus maker anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't think we necessarily have to be allergic. I mean, I come back as dairy allergic, so I pretty much avoid it.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes the cheese I have, you know, that Parmesan, that shaved Parmesan I may throw on a salad, if I do that for several days, it's almost like a threshold effect. Now I'm sniffling right. or something.
And yeah. I'm also troubled by the epidemiological data that suggests that dairy is associated with higher risk in men of prostate cancer and possibly in women of breast cancer and maybe even
ovarian
cancer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
while there is actually less information now to suggest that high-fat dairy is the cause of heart disease, that's actually being debunked. You know, I'm not sure that dairy
is not the saturated fat. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, you know, then we can factor in environmental pollution. And some people say, you know, go organic, go grass-fed. You know, I just bought some grass-fed butter from Germany. I don't even want to know how much that costs, but it was appealing. It said it was imported from Germany. It said it was grass and hay-fed cows in Germany.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Doesn't get any better than that. But, like, you know, probably worth its weight in platinum. You know, just but anyway, I got a You know, so
but, you know what you said earlier about prostate and ovarian and breast cancer and the dairy connection. It may be more to do with the insulin-like growth factor.
Right.
You know, not the same as you know drinking glasses of milk or eating ice cream or a lot of fruited yogurt, which is yogurt with jam in it.
Yes.
You know, how do we kind of know? How do we know? But so I think or I determined that. The least offensive dairy for me might be some cheese here and there.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to questions.
Okay.
What have we got? Because we could, you know, we could just have this just wrap for,
we could
you know,
go
for
on for
45
hours.
Minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We've got Judy from Minnesota. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, my 32-year-old son has a severe drinking addiction. I notice that his hands shake. He doesn't admit to how much he drinks, but his brother and ex-girlfriend have told me it's very bad. Mm-hmm. I've told him we're concerned and to please quit, but I've heard it could be dangerous to stop cold turkey. Will glutamine help his cravings? Should he take milk thistle?
Yeah.
Any other supplements?
Well, this is, I mean, I think you realize, Layla, this is a situation beyond glutamine.
He needs a program.
He needs he needs an intervention. You know, he needs program
needs
an intervention.
And an intervention. Yeah.
And, you know, one of the hallmarks of severe addiction is denial. And, you know, I think the very most salvageable people are the people who have a habit and they're concerned about it and they want to stop. And the most dangerous situation is when a person is, you know, is not even ambivalent about it and is in denial about the consequences.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a serious problem. I think the way to do this is to go to Al-Anon, which is actually not for the people who are addicted. It's for the families of people who are addicted to develop a strategy to, you know, sort of a tough love strategy to be helpful, but not to enable and also to cope with the addiction, because sometimes the people around you who are addicted are so destructive to you that you have to kind of create some limits and barriers. They can, you know, steal from you. They can deceive you. They can hurt you or damage your property. And this is a dilemma for parents because you want to express love and support for a child. But when a child is kind of in that possessed state, you have to treat it in a different way. So Al-Anon is a first step to develop a strategy. You know, what are you going to do about this? Well, I'm not going to offer, you know, Charlie Brown, you know, 25 cents or nickel psychoanalysis here. I think that this is a serious problem, and maybe, you know, family therapy could ultimately happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, concerted program, which is both a social support program as well. Then there's a nutritional support aspect. And perhaps you can talk a little bit about, let's assume that we'd get sign on from Junior here, you know, and he wants to stop, but he wants to get some help in terms of nutritional support. What are some things that might help?
Yeah. For after rehab and all that, because the addiction can be all enveloping, as you say. I mean, of the macronutrients that we use for fuel, you know, proteins, carbohydrates, fats, there's also alcohol. It's a fourth fuel.
Right.
And, so
and we know that because have you ever ordered Crepe Suzette Flambé, you know, where they light it at your table in a fancy restaurant? You know that alcohol burns with a very hot flame, like a blue flame. That's a potent fuel, right? That's very caloric.
Absolutely. First, he needs to get clean and sober and start to, you know, but we need to enhance the brain chemicals because, you know, he's going to be on a constant lookout for the dopamine
right.
that he's missing. So definitely good quality proteins, no processed foods. He'll need additional fish oil, magnesium, B complex. It really is a very, very comprehensive program. Very healthy fats, very nutrient-dense foods. I remember being a hospital dietitian, and one of the places we had to...
There weren't any alcoholics there, were there?
Well, actually, in the psych ward, that's one of the places I had
kidding.
To cover.
I'm just kidding, because you were in a New York hospital somewhere, in Long Island or
yep.
Queens, right?
Yeah, I was out at Flushing Medical Center. In addition for my rotation, I was up at Jacoby Medical
right.
Center in the Bronx.
And, you know, what's interesting is in a hospital setting, you know, probably about a quarter of the health problems are alcohol-related, and maybe another quarter are drug-related. You know, so addiction is a really serious cause of all kinds of mayhem and health mm-hmm. calamities. So anyway, I'm sorry. So what did you do there?
No. But I do want to stress to Judy, it's not a simple matter of, will glutamine help him now, and can I give him milk thistle?
Yeah, right.
He needs to make some very important decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whether he's going to quit or not.
Right.
Because, you know.
Because the glutamine is not going to give him the resolve to quit. The milk thistle is not going to give him the resolve to quit. Milk thistle is a little bit protective to the liver, but, you know, it's the high levels of alcohol are so toxic that it will overwhelm the milk thistle. And I will tell you this, though. Interesting, you can somewhat – milk thistle is not my favorite thing for protecting the liver under the stress of alcohol. Actually, my favorite thing is lecithin or phosphatidylcholine because I learned early on during my medical training when I first got interested in nutrition like 30 years ago, there was a guy doing research at one of the hospitals where I trained on cirrhosis of the liver. And mm-hmm. one way in an animal model – and again, you know, animal lovers, cover your ears because, you know, these experiments are, you know, perhaps unnecessarily cruel. They took baboons and they fed them. They gave them a choice of either drinking water or drinking beer. Well, given a choice, baboons will inevitably drink the beer. They love the beer. And they will then drink so much beer they'll develop cirrhosis of the liver like humans. You know, there's no baboon chapter of AA. They just get addicted real quick because it's,
well,
you know.
You know what? I think if you offered humans the choice between just water
and beer
as opposed to lemonade and beer, yeah. It would be
exactly. Well, you know, like maybe we should try that at the Hoffman Center because we have a free water dispenser. We could also have like a keg of beer. We'll see like what happens.
That's it.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, have like a, you know, it's like draft beer on tap. But anyway, so what they found was they could somewhat protect the livers of these baboons by feeding them high doses of lecithin, the rich in phosphatidylcholine, that does protect the liver. So, all right. I mean, that being said, what are you going to do? You're going to let him drink himself into oblivion and give him a little lecithin. That's what you call harm reduction, but it doesn't really get to the bottom of the problem.
Yeah. Hey, do you remember Earl Mendel's vitamin Bible?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the first things I picked up as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I remember just walking around with this book and reading through all the different various conditions. And I remember there was one chapter on...
He had an answer for everything. An answer
regimen.
For everything. An answer for everything. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the drinking man's regimen. I was like, oh my goodness.
And what was it?
You mean somebody should continue drinking and take all these B vitamins and so forth and everything?
Right.
And yeah, I thought that was interesting.
That's a little
anyway.
Naive. Yeah, I mean, look, and then there's, I mean, I don't want to drive this into the ground, but then I occasionally will get a patient, you know, maybe once every 5 years, I get a patient who says, look, I'm a smoker, I'm not going to stop, and I want you to give me vitamins that will help reduce the damage caused by smoking. And I refuse, and I'll tell you why. Because they've actually done some studies on antioxidants, which in non-smokers probably offer some protection. But in smokers, there might be so much free radical damage or challenge to the antioxidants that they actually, you can turn the antioxidants into prooxidants. This happened with beta carotene in a study of Finnish smokers. They thought the Finnish smokers, they'd reduce the risk of lung cancer.
Yeah.
It actually backfired and it somewhat increased the risk. So that's often mm-hmm. cited as an argument against antioxidants. I would say that's a pretty good argument for high dose synthetic narrow focus beta carotene in a smoker. You know, who probably is drinking too much because most of those smokers were drinkers. So anyway,
interesting.
Best to stop the bad stuff.
Yeah. Judy, best of luck with your son.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see here. We've got a question from Gary. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Would you please clarify what constitutes a meal? I ask as there are products that are sold as protein powders, and others are called meal replacements. Some of the protein powders warn that they're not meal replacements. And also, is whey protein the best for muscle building? Mm-hmm. And does it really help to build glutathione in the body? I listen to all your podcasts. I hope you can keep up all the good work. Thank you, Gary. I actually podcasted about this a little bit on October 23rd. You wanted a big full answer, but really, let's talk about what constitutes a meal.
Okay.
Because first of all, you want a certain number of calories, depending on how many calories you're ingesting.
Right.
And the reason that some protein drinks may say this is not a meal replacement is if you look at the calories, it might only have like 130.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a meal.
Right.
So you may need something in addition to that.
So
but the benefits of whey protein are enormous, actually.
Right. Yeah, so I actually had dinner with some people in the industry last night. You know, I was talking about the restaurant. And, you know, we were talking about various things, and they said, you know, they happen to be from a company that makes a lot of the amino acids that go into these meal replacements, okay? Mm-hmm. And they asked me, what's your favorite meal replacement? And I think my answer surprised them. I said, I'm not a big believer in meal replacements. It's kind of like an oxymoron. A meal is a meal. A meal is like what we're having. It's got, you know, you sit down, you relax, you know, you have, you know, some hors d'oeuvres, a salad, a main course. You know, you can have a cup of decaf. You can have a glass of wine. You can have, you know, a side dish of vegetables. That's more what the human physiology demands, and to slug down a concentrated protein with maybe some healthy fats and some carbohydrates that are slow release sort of replicates the qualities of a meal, but it also it also gets people, I think, into a bad habit, which is
it gets them into the slim fast diet.
Yeah. Yeah,
an over reliance of these meal replacements.
But you know, I think you'll validate this is that we spend a lot of time teaching people how to eat, not saying, "Look, stop eating and buy our products," because we could sell these things for, you know, $60-$70 a canister, and you know, and give people like a 3-month supply, and great, you know. And but what happens when they decide that that's too monotonous? They still haven't learned how to eat. Then they stop using the protein powder. They go back putting on the feed bag, eating junk food. And that's not good. So the setting for a meal replacement is perhaps for some very high-end athletes, you know, and very high-end, you know, people who do the Tour de France or something like that, or Ironman triathlon. They need like a scientific eating formulas because they literally, their exercise is so hard that if they ate a lot, they would get, you know, stomach upset and diarrhea. So they have to get these kind of high-energy formulas to kind of keep them going. Okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. Then there's some people who really have a lot of trouble eating, and so we make, you know, you can probably possibly talk about healthy shakes that, you know, you suggest, you know, take a whey powder, add some coconut oil, maybe put in some fresh berries. See, that's better than, you know, some kind of synthetic meal replacement. And then, you know,
That's true.
We have these advertisements for, you know, Glucerna and for, you know, what are the...
Boost and Ensure. Yeah.
And it makes, and, you know, there's only so many really elderly, debilitated people. So what they do is they show now younger, middle-aged people, and they show, you know, they have an active lifestyle and they're not bedbound or, you know, critically ill. I mean, they used to reserve these things for people who were super sick. Now they're saying, well, you know, if you're just an ordinary person and you want a little boost, you want to, you know, make sure you get enough, you know, adequate balance of nutrients, just, you know, drink this stuff. I think that's a bad message to send.
It is. Do you remember Carnation Instant Breakfast?
Not only that, but I remember, I'll do you one better. I remember something called Metrical. Metrical.
Ooh, that which I don't was, remember. Okay.
That was like the, one of the first diet formulas. And people got really sick on that because it was just an unbalanced. It was made basically from animal hooves, And so it gave you, you know, like the two amino acids and sort of a very incomplete thing. But it was, a part of the diet mania and this new technology that they could make powders that were meal substitutes. And instead of, some people can't control themselves eating, they just use, if they can force themselves to just drink a 150-calorie thing and not cheat, they might lose some weight, but they could also really endanger their health and, create habits that are not sustainable. So anyway, that's my take on it.
It's all about, no, I completely agree with you. That would be exactly the way to go. And the benefits of whey protein, they provide branched-chain amino acids.
Right.
It's also precursor for glutathione production in the body. So, yeah.
I think I say one more thing, and then we need to break because we divide these podcasts into two parts. But I think this discussion of what is a meal, if we had this discussion in France, the French would laugh. They would say, these Americans, they don't even know anymore what is a meal. And then they would, point to like a Michelin, four-star restaurant. They say, that is a meal, and with small portions, delicious tastes and, like a nice, long, languorous afternoon. Not necessarily
a 2-hour lunch.
Yeah, but not necessarily putting on the feed bag, but delicious taste, beautifully prepared food, and a leisurely approach to imbibing the food in good company. The net result is that people binge less, eat less, and I bet the consumption of although it's getting more Americanized over there, consumption of these meal substitutes in France much less because of cultural mores that dictate that people really should spend time, sit down, have a meal,
Absolutely.
I mean, I see these people, they're walking down the street, and they're eating pizza, walking down the street, eating pizza.
Walking down the street.
Eating
you
a slice.
You wouldn't see that in France. Right, right.
I don't think so.
You have to make time to eat.
Yeah. Or even in Italy, where pizza comes from. you sit in the piazza under an umbrella, and they bring it out, and it's, it's kind of like, hang out. Anyway, so this, I'm sorry we can't give you the magic formula, because we sure waste a lot of time eating. I mean, imagine all the time we could save if we just, slug down some protein formulas and, we could dispense with all that time wasted at the kitchen table.
It's because of that habit, that bad habit, that we can't pay attention to our satiety cues, our hunger cues. We eat when we get a break in the day, but often we don't get a break in the day. I'm talking about generally the American population of being too busy and being too stressed, and you're not tuned in anymore to when you're hungry and when you're full.
Exactly.
And then it becomes a matter of emotional eating and eating to soothe ourselves from that very long, harrowing day.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to give everybody a chance to have a lunch break. And when you come back, please listen to part two of today's podcast. Layla, give us a preview.
Yeah. What is the lowdown on magnesium stearate?
All right. Important question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with part two.